From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. One of the more irritating yet necessary legislative struggles has been waged for almost four decades, which is the repeal of the two notorious provisions in the Social Security law that discriminate against many public employees. This includes federal, state, and municipal workers. The Social Security statutes are the government pension offset and the windfall elimination provision. These two sections of the Social Security law can financially penalize annuitants who participate in the civil service retirement system. Legislation to repeal the windfall elimination provision and government pension offset has 288 bipartisan House co-sponsors as of the beginning of August. The total 288 is two co-sponsors short of having enough co-sponsors for the bill to be added to the so-called House consent calendar and being eligible for a floor vote. There's information about the bill, how to directly communicate with your representatives, and a comprehensive list of its co-sponsors at the NAPS website on the Legislative Action page. Now let's turn to this week's NAPS Chat guest. I am delighted to welcome Michael Plunkett, a colleague of mine who has been engaged in postal affairs for about 28 years. Mike is currently president and the chief executive officer of the Association for Postal Commerce and concurrently president of the Delivery Technology Advocacy Council. Mike formerly served in various upper-level positions at the Postal Service, including managing retail alliances and serving as vice president of pricing and classifications, as well as working on postal business development. Mike also serves on the Postmaster General's Mailers Technical Advisory Committee. Welcome to Naps Chat, Mike.
Thank you, Bob. Very happy to be here. Appreciate it.
So let's start with the basics. The association you head is not called the Association of Mailers. It's named the Association of Postal Commerce, a much broader scope of interest. The postal economy accounts for about $1.6 trillion in the U.S. economy, and that's about 6.5% of the nation's gross domestic product, and it employs about 7.3 million Americans. So could you talk about the membership of the Association for Postal Commerce, its size, who are its members, and what is its mission?
Sure, Bob. We do represent mailers. We represent the originators of all kinds of mail, but we also represent the companies that work with them, their suppliers, for example, transportation and software companies that are integral to the production and execution of mail. We also represent the major shippers such as UPS, FedEx, Amazon, and we represent other associations. And the way I would characterize our work, it's a mixture of education and advocacy. Our members have full-time positions of leadership within the mailing and shipping industry and don't have time to track postal affairs, so we try to do that for them. We're also advocates in that we are active participants in litigation before the Postal Regulatory Commission, and we work with other federal agencies that are involved in the oversight and governance of the Postal Service. And we, of course, try to work directly with the Postal Service to advance all kinds of issues of relevance to our members.
I got to stop you right there. You said the Postcom, that's the sort of the shorthand for the Association for Postal Commerce, in addition to represents traditional folks within the mailing industries, also represents competitors of the Postal Service, that is FedEx and UPS. They also have a collaboration with the Postal Service, of course, but primarily they have been historically competitors. How do you reconcile the conflict that may exist within the membership on that particular issue?
Well, it's very much issue specific. So there are some issues where it is not easy to get a consensus among all of our members because they have divergent interests. But what I would say unites our membership and a goal that we share with the Postal Service as well is everyone is invested in having a healthy, financially sound, efficient, and affordable postal system, because it is still, as those statistics you cited point out, it is still an integral part of the nation's commercial infrastructure. And all of our members depend on it and are united by that specific thing they all share in common.
Now, I note that you have had, and I mentioned, you had an immersive almost three-decade career as part of the postal community, most of the time as an employee of the United States Postal Service. Can I ask you how this experience informs your activities on behalf of Postcom? And has your perspective changed now that you are a USPS outsider looking in rather than the converse?
Yeah, that's a good but complicated question. And I should point out that a brief period of my postal employment included time as a delivery supervisor in Manchester, New Hampshire, longer ago than I care to remember. what I would say is a lot of my time, especially when I came to Washington, was spent working in pricing as an economist and then later as a manager, as an executive. And so I probably have somewhat more insight into the way those inner processes work than somebody who doesn't have that experience. And that has been helpful in making the transition to the commercial side or the mailer side of the mailing industry. And this might sound like I'm patting myself on the back, but the way I would describe my role when I worked at the Postal Service was try to be an advocate for progressive changes within the framework that existed at the time. When I was there, it was right when my last few years were right after the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act. And so I tried to push my agency forward by testing new things and trying out different approaches. And I've tried to bring that perspective of the need for constantly trying to evolve and develop to my role now on, you know, the other side of the fence. And I think there are pluses and minuses. I have a lot of friends that still work at the Postal Service, but I know we have to sometimes take positions that are antagonistic to some of their regulatory objectives. And that creates a form of tension that is sometimes difficult to navigate, but that's part of the job.
We'll talk a little bit about that tension a little bit later in the podcast. But earlier this week, we both attended the August meeting of the Postal Board of Governors in Washington. And I want to reflect on what actually occurred at that meeting. On the one hand, USPS Chairman Ramon Martinez and Postmaster General Louis DeJoy were rather boastful of the progress made in the implementation of the Postal Service's 10-year plan, particularly infrastructure realignment. On the other hand, Chief Financial Officer Joe Corbett and Vice President for Retail and Delivery Josh Collins' statements to the board were considerably more sobering. For example, they reported a mail volume decline, so far totaling 8.1 billion pieces, an accumulated loss of about $1.7 billion, and a slight decline on first-class mail on-time performance. How do you reconcile the tale of these two postal services?
So I think we're in the very early stages of the implementation of the operational changes arising from the Delivering for America plan. So I don't think we're seeing any financial benefits yet. As far as the service performance, I think what we might be seeing there is, you know, the Postal Service has been very upfront over the last couple of years about going to more of a ground-based network. And you saw a decline in first class and a little bump in marketing mail service performance. And that seems like it might be the integration of those two different networks into a single, mostly ground-based network. I think that's something we'll have to follow. The financial results really are sobering. A $5.6 billion operating loss this far into the fiscal year when Delivering for America plan originally called for break-even this year. That's really a problem. And those volume declines, I would characterize those as unprecedented. The only other times we've seen declines like that were in the recession of 2007 to 2008 and the COVID pandemic 2020. This is the first time we've seen such large declines without a massive external shock.
And we're seeing the economy recover right now.
Right.
And people are starting to buy more. Is it that people are purchasing more retail on-site brick and mortar facilities, or is it that they are buying from retailers who are using someone other than the Postal Service to ship products?
Well, I'll offer an alternative explanation, which is that the rapidity and aggressiveness with which the Postal Service has raised rates on advertising mail, particularly catalogs, have had a chilling effect on marketers who now must prepare for postage rate increases twice a year. It used to be that postage accounted for maybe 30% of the overall costs of a catalog, for example. Now it's more like 70%. And so marketers are having to make more and more difficult choices between the kinds of media they select when trying to reach their customers.
But even within the package shipping space, the Postal Service has saw a decline in volume. And this, and this is the area where I think the Postmaster General is attempting to focus, and his infrastructure realignment is sort of geared to integrating traditional mail with parcels. And if parcels are not picking up the load for this, what are we to make?
I think there are multiple factors at work here, and I'm not sure how this is going to shake out. I think what you said before is probably right, that you are seeing sort of a bounce back and consumers going back more to traditional ways of acquiring goods than they did during the pandemic. I think you're also seeing a proliferation of other ways for people to get stuff. You can go and pick things up at a package locker, for example, or at a retailer. Later today, I ordered something online. I'm going to go pick it up at their store because it's more convenient for me than to have it delivered to my home. And those kinds of options are going to continue to proliferate, and that'll be a challenge for the Postal Service to navigate as it does try to grow its business. Like, a lot of the expectations of the Delivering for America plan are predicated on the Postal Service being able to grow its shipping business.
I'm curious, amongst shippers, do you see a concern about the increase in postal theft as being a motivating factor for people to sort of seek other ways of having packages delivered to their home?
I don't think, certainly that is getting a lot more media attention than it has in the past. I don't sense yet that that's affecting commercial mailers' willingness to use the postal system. As far as shippers go, you know, porch piracy's been around for a very long time. And it, in my take on the recent proliferation of postal crime, has seemed to have more to do with check washing and things like that, or people actually attacking postal employees, which are serious issues, but that I don't perceive have really affected commercial mailers' willingness to use the postal service yet.
Okay, I'm going to come back to the idea of what role the Postal Service plays in our economy, because if it's such, it has such a broad impact. So I'm sure you would agree that the Postal Service remains a vital part of this country's essential economic and social infrastructure. And I have a number of questions for you in that area. Mm-hmm. Should we as a nation treat the Postal Service as a governmental service or pivot it to more like a business?
That's probably the most important policy question that faces anyone involved in postal affairs. I can tell you that based on my contacts, there is no current appetite for changing the governmental status of the Postal Service. There's always been tension between the degree to which the Postal Service should behave like a commercial enterprise versus a public service. That may be elevating a little bit as the Postal Service tries to dig out from its financial hole. But that tension's always been there and probably always will be there to some extent.
The Postmaster General has been very critical of the Postal Regulatory Commission. In part, it deals with transparency, it deals with regulatory authority and authority generally. But I want to explore with you now, in assuring the continued viability of the agency and its mission, what role should the Postal Regulatory Commission play?
Yeah, I have to respectfully disagree with the Postmaster General on this one. And I just parenthetically point out that last week in Germany, the postal regulator stopped a rate increase by the German postal operator, something that would never happen in the United States. So the Postal Service benefits from very, very light-handed regulation right now. But I would say the role of the PRC is still critical. The Postal Service does enjoy a monopoly on the delivery of mail and access to the mailbox, which is extremely valuable and requires direct oversight. And that is the role of the PRC, to protect users, captive users of the postal system, from possible exploitation by a monopoly operator. It's a classic need for regulation. And they're the only oversight body that has any real enforcement authority. So their ability to require transparency as the Postal Service conducts its operations remains incredibly important.
Yeah, I noted in a recent filing made by the PRC in one of the dockets, like on a rate docket, that that the Postcom was concerned about, particularly rates as they may affect rural mail delivery in rural areas and certain like non-contiguous territory area. Are we going – I mean, the PRC has a specific interest in protecting rural and, let's say, mail to Hawaii, Alaska, American Samoa, Guam, and so forth. Is that something that they should exercise more?
Yes and no. I mean, on the mail side, rates are generally uniform, so there's no disadvantage for rural customers. In fact, you could argue that on the mail side of the Postal Service's business, rural customers benefit from internal subsidies. Now, on the package side, the Postal Service is the only operator that goes to certain parts of the U.S., which means if the regulator is not careful, the opportunity may exist for the Postal Service to exploit that. Now, in that same docket, we argued that the regulator should not transfer first-class package service back to the market-dominant side. That would be unnecessary and disruptive. But we do think there's an ongoing need for the PRC to keep an eye on what the Postal Service does, because opportunities for exploitation do exist, even if they're not being exploited right now.
Okay, we've talked about the regulator's role in postal oversight and postal operations. What about the congressional role? Because the PMG has also been very critical of Congress's interference in postal operations.
That's a mystery to me, because I think Congress has been very generous to the Postal Service in the last few years. They provided substantial direct funding or compensation to the Postal Service for costs incurred, for example, in the COVID pandemic, and are providing substantial funding for the purchase of electric vehicles and the infrastructure to support them. But the Postal Service is still a federal agency. Yes, it's an independent establishment of the executive branch, but it's part of the government. And as such, Congress will continue to exercise oversight. Last year, that took the form of the Postal Service Reform Act of 2022, which again conferred considerable benefits to the Postal Service in the form of relief on their balance sheet. So I think Congress has done the current postal management regime quite a lot of favors in the last few years. They'll continue to have a role. I think one of the problems with last year's act is it didn't really reform anything. It moved some money around, but it didn't change any of the governance structures of the Postal Service. And as losses continue to mount, I have a fear that Congress will probably need to be active again.
What actions do you think Congress may take in the governance structure of the Postal Service if financials don't recover?
Well, in the short run, I don't think there's much risk that Congress is going to do anything. I think there are far more urgent matters before Congress than the Postal Service as we speak. But, you know, the Postal Service operates in every state, in every community, and so they will always draw the interest of legislators. And at some point down the road, I can see them coming back to the table, trying to intervene to prevent any accumulation of losses that are not sustainable.
Yeah, because you did see at the most recent postal oversight hearing where you had member from Nebraska and a member from South Carolina both had a good relationship with the chairman of the committee, Chairman James Comer, who has a good relationship with the Postmaster General, but
right.
Nevertheless, being critical of postal operations in their respective districts for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, I mean, every member of Congress hears from their constituents about postal issues because the Postal Service is everywhere. And they would not be performing their role as public servants if they did not respond to those constituent concerns. That's not unique to the current environment. That's been true as long as I've been around. I'm sure as long as you've been around and is with us forever, as long as the Postal Service remains part of the federal government.
Let's get back to the Postal Regulatory Commission for a second. And this is about a docket or a case the PRC is currently considering that is of interest to me, it's of interest to you. And this is regard to the Delivering for America plan, specifically the absence of the Postal Service request for an advisory opinion prior to the implementation of the plan, and the apparent failure of the Postal Service to share relevant information with stakeholders about the plan prior to implementation. Hence, we have this public inquiry. Could you explain Association for Postal Commerce's interest in this docket?
Sure. The issue of whether or not the Postal Service should have requested an advisory opinion before implementing the network changes that it has undertaken is not of particular interest to our association, although we were active participants in other dockets where the Postal Service sought advisory opinions on first class and periodicals. Our concern in this case is much more about acquiring information about the Postal Service's plans to change its network, because when the Postal Service moves operations within or around its network, it affects our members and their ability to efficiently enter mail. The vast majority of mail is produced by commercial mailers and entered directly into a postal facility somewhere in the U.S. So if the Postal Service is undertaking plans to change the configuration of that network, our members have a direct economic interest. I would go further and say that we believe strongly that successful implementation of the Delivering for America plan, at least as far as changes to the processing and transportation network go, really would benefit from greater participation from commercial mailers who, again, account for a substantial portion of the mail that gets into the postal network. The better they can plan and anticipate what is going to happen to postal facilities over the next 1 to 5 years, the better they'll be able to adapt, which will benefit my members and the Postal Service.
You have members who conduct business down in Georgia, let's say, where the first major processing network change took place. Have you heard from any of your members down there about issues that have come about because of that change?
The only thing we heard, and it was difficult to quantify or substantiate, was a fall off in scanning performance at the new facility. No major service disruptions of any kind, but we did detect that scanning operations were not as efficient at the new facility. That seems to have been temporary, and not surprising given that you're starting an entirely new process. You'd have some bugs to work out the first one or more times around, but no service disruptions, just, again, some scanning difficulties.
Do you think prior to implementing the plan, there should have been more engagement with stakeholders, such as the mailers who might exist in areas that are directly impacted by facility changes?
I am in favor of radical transparency when it comes to the Postal Service, which, you know, from our perspective, is part of a much larger system. You talked about, you know, the mailing industry accounting for millions of jobs, and, you know, once 1.6 and $1.7 trillion of GDP, the Postal Service is at the hub of that system. And we often think of it as an integrated whole. And the more that the different parts of that system are communicating and integrating with one another, the more efficient it will be overall. So I am always in favor of the Postal Service being as forthcoming as it possibly can be with regard to its future plans. And I think an opportunity was missed when there wasn't more direct engagement before the implementation of the plan began.
Should the venue of that discussion have been the Mailers Technical Advisory Council?
I don't know. I mean, on some issues, perhaps, because MTAC serves a very important purpose and is very good at resolving technical issues. So as the plan began to get more fully fleshed out, maybe some things belong in MTAC. But on the higher end objectives, MTAC might not be the best forum for that. And I'm not sure any of the current domains in which the Postal Service interacts with the public are ideally suited to that kind of collaboration.
Is the PRC the appropriate venue?
Probably not, because while, again, I believe the PRC plays an important role, litigation tends to make certain kinds of back and forth collaborative discussions a challenge, because lawyers are involved and you're on the record, and sharing ideas is not always easy in a forum like that. Again, I'm not sure any of the current environments would have been optimal for that.
Final question. There are different stakeholders with regard to the Postal Service and the postal community. There are there's the mailing community. There's the postal impacted community, which is beyond the mailing community necessarily. There are employee groups, unions, management associations. There's Congress. There are a lot of stakeholders. What should be, in your view, the collaboration between the stakeholders with any time there's a major change in postal operations or in that could impact service? How should the Postal Service approach it?
The Postal Service is in a tough spot because whatever they do, somebody is going to complain. Sometimes I'm that person that complains. So they have a really tough job in appeasing all of the different interest groups that you talk about, because they can all align around certain things like the need for a sustainable, reliable, and affordable postal system, but they almost never agree on the right way to try to get there. So I think we are all continue to be involved in this ongoing effort to try to find the right way and the right methods by which to have the right kinds of collaboration to make sure that all of those sometimes competing needs can be met in a way that provides the maximum benefit to the system overall. On certain issues, there will inevitably be winners and losers. That's just an unfortunate byproduct of the environment we operate in. But that shouldn't prevent us from always trying to come up with more and better ways to try to resolve common concerns and solve problems in a collaborative and constructive way.
Thank you, Mike, for that. I'd say radical collaboration, possibly.
Always.
I want to thank Michael Plunkett, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Association of Postal Commerce, for joining me today on this week's Naps Chat. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you to our Naps Chat listeners. If you enjoy Naps Chat, please leave a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, tell your friends to download our podcast and listen in. Be well and safe till next week.
I'm going to stand right down and write myself a letter and make